Welcome to episode 171 of Speaking of Mysteries. I'm Nancy Clare, and today I'm talking to Rhea Fry about her new crime fiction novel, Because You're Mine. Welcome, Rhea.
Thank you so much for having me.
You begin Because You're Mine with a searing description of your own sexual assault and how the devastation felt can be compounded by confusion. How you, like many who find yourself in this unfortunate, horrible group, rationalize the attacks against them as being their own fault as a way to make it okay, to avoid the self-perception of victim. And I was curious how you use that in your writing, and specifically in Because You're Mine.
You know, I think sexual assault, and as you said, it's kind of a complex subject in general. I think, you know, we hear the word assault and we instantly think of something very violent and very brutal, which it often is. But in my experience, though, it was much more confusing in terms of kind of the seduction and the sexual grooming that happened and these feelings that I had for the person. I think sometimes sexual assault can actually be a little bit more based if you are having a relationship or you embark on a relationship with that person. So for this book in particular, it kind of informed a couple of these characters, and it really focuses a little bit more on the he said, she said aspect of it, because there are two sides to every story. There are there's always reasoning behind why people do the things they do, and that more than any of the serious subject matter in this book kind of drives all of these characters is behind their actions. And I, as a writer, I'm just interested in that probably more than anything, quite honestly.
Well, there's a lot to unpack in your book from the very first page. But the first question I'd ask specifically about your book is about female friendships. At the core of this story is the relationship between four women, Grace, Lee, Alice, and Carol, but mostly Grace and Lee. How did you build these four characters in such a way that the story could spin out from the core of their interactions?
That is a wonderful question. Actually, when I wrote this book, I was in the midst of raising an only child, and my friendships were just so important to me. I actually had several girlfriends at the time who were also raising only children. And we kind of all relied on each other at different stages. And we used to kind of sit around and say, as morbid as this is, like, what would happen if one of us died and left our child without a guardian? And a lot of times we would say, oh, well, it would make sense if the child would go to the parent or to a parent or a spouse or, you know, just some other family member. But then we started talking about, you know, when you're so close to each other as friends and you're raising kids, sometimes that feels like the better choice. Like, why would I not choose a girlfriend to have, you know, my child grow up with a parent who's also in it, in the midst of parenthood like I am? So we started these conversations, and I just was kind of wanting to develop this world of female friendships. They all appear close. They appear in various stages of their lives. But then again, we have these kind of secrets lurking underneath the surface for a couple of them and, you know, these kind of sinister paths that inform their present and their future.
Well, I think guilt and resentment spiced with lies makes a fine toxic stew. But your characters, especially as you're getting into the book, the characters don't seem mired in their faults. They seem to accept them and accept each other's faults. And for one, in this book, the women, all the women love their children, especially Lee, whose son Mason is autistic. I felt like they were trying to reach to their better angels, or am I just a cockeyed optimist?
No, I think that is a good point. I mean, I think in this day and age too, the world moves so fast and there's so much to do. And when you have a child, when you are a parent, And of course, you're going to have good days or bad days, but you have to kind of stay in the present moment. You don't really have time to sit around and think about your past or your secrets or all of your mistakes. You're focused on keeping a child alive. And for Lee, son, you know, is on the spectrum and does have this sensory processing disorder. Her whole world kind of revolves around just making sure he's okay. So I think the motherhood angle and kind of taking care of their kids and that overriding everything else was really important to me. Not that parenting's easy by any means, or you're not going to have terrible days, because you will. But, you know, I kind of explored that subject in my last book, and I really wanted to kind of show, you know, semi-positive relationships with between these mothers and their children.
The major male character, Noah, as I read the book, he acts almost like a vector, you know, a line with both magnitude and direction that sort of just goes right through the story. He's a friend of Grace's, but also as a special education teacher, a tutor to Mason, Lee's son, and he's got these other things that are swirling around him, his other relationships. And was that an intentional construction to make him this like this arrow that just shoots through the story?
Yes, it was. And quite honestly, when I started writing this book, it was very, very different in terms of it was a little bit more women's fiction. Noah kind of served a different purpose in the book than he ended up serving in this version, but. You know, I wanted to make him a little bit complex, a little bit of an object in some ways, because Lee is very interested in him. But you know, Noah's got some secrets of his own. He was very close with his brother Wyatt, who was also on the spectrum. He was autistic, and he kind of serves a very interesting role between these women, between Grace and Lee specifically, and his closeness with Mason. So, I mean, he's kind of brought into to really show this sibling relationship. That's a huge theme of the novel, as well as just these relationships that we have with siblings, whether we're close or not close. I don't really think I'm answering your question, but
I think you are. I think I just found the way Noah intersects throughout the book as just a fascinating construction technique, the way he bounces off, especially Grace and Lee, shows us aspects of his character. He's different with both women, and the women are different with him than they are with other people. So that just struck me as a very, very elegant way to help propel the story. And I'm always curious among writers, and when you're talking to people who write crime fiction, you know, we don't want to spoil the story. We don't want to talk about the twists and the turns. But one of the things that propels the twists and the turns are characters like Noah.
Definitely. And yeah, it's funny talking about this book. You know, I'm just starting to do kind of interviews about this book, and it is kind of a tricky one to talk about without giving away key pieces of the book. It's a little tricky, I think.
Well, hopefully you'll get some practice talking to me about it. And, you know, you mentioned another thing, that the sibling relationship within this book is also one of the key kind of forward drivers of the story. And siblings, having a relationship with a sibling is complicated, I think.
So complicated. Yes. And, you know, for these characters in particular, you know, Lee grew up with an alcoholic father. Her mother was murdered, but her mother was pregnant with a son. So Lee never got the opportunity to become a sibling. So she has that loss. And then her best friend, Grace, lost a sister. And then Noah lost a brother. And, you know, for people who have lost siblings or lost anyone, I think we can kind of idolize them in our minds, or, you know, kind of think about these relationships maybe imperfect ways, or, you know, you are fiercely loyal to them. But I find the sibling relationship really tricky. I have one sibling. He's 4 years older, a brother. And I mean, I remember growing up and feeling, we still joke to this day that he's the golden child, can never do any wrong. And I'm now he's been demoted, though, because my daughter is the golden child and he's the silver child and I'm the bronze child. So we used to make jokes all the time about, you know, I think there's a natural competitiveness that comes into play. I think just because you have a sibling, you know, it obviously doesn't mean that you're going to be close or have this amazing relationship. But I do find the loyalty that we have to our families very interesting. Even if you don't see them every day, there's just this kind of underlying loyalty, which is really explored in this book in many different ways.
The other thing that fascinates me is the story in this book, the story is not told in a linear fashion. It's told from the points of view of Grace, Lee, and Noah in the past and in the present, and interjected with what seemed to be notes from a journal that the writer of these notes, who was not identified. And was it difficult to put the book together this way? Did you write one character's point of view at a time? Did you write the past and then the future and then cobble it together? Or did you just keep that all straight in your head, in which case I'm in awe?
No, I would love to say that I did. But again, this book kind of changed so many different times with kind of plot and structure and what we were doing. And it was a little bit more pieced together and more orchestrated than my first novel. But, you know, initially, as I said, the book was actually told from the four women's points of view. So we had Grace, Lee, Carol, and Alice. So once we got rid of Alice and Carol, we brought in Noah. And I kind of tried to focus on this present arc. You know, we know in the beginning, someone's hiking, they die in the beginning. So we're working up to this midpoint of finding out, you know, who dies and who leaves their child without a guardian. And then before we really get the answers, we dive into the past. So actually the past chapters were written early on, and it kind of told its own story. So I felt like we had kind of two different novels going, and then these mysterious journal entries were thrown in to kind of keep the reader guessing as well. So it was a bit of a balancing act, and it's a little bit unorthodox, I think, for like a normal domestic suspense or, you know, thriller novel, because we do kind of dive so deeply into the past. It's not just like little flashbacks, but kind of fully fleshed out chapters and moments of time. But I felt that past storyline was super, super important, even if you find it out later. My whole point and goal for the book was that once you finish the last page and you kind of know the truth, that if you went back and read it again, you'd have a completely different experience reading the book. And I've actually had a few readers read it and be like, oh my God, it is. It's totally different. So it was kind of tricky keeping it all together.
Well, I agree, because I read the book and then I went back and didn't read it as deeply before this interview, but I did read it, and you're absolutely right. It's a little like you've got two tracks on the space-time continuum, and they eventually collide. And the results are explosive, to say the least.
Well, good.
You mentioned your first novel, Not Her Daughter, and you are currently, according to the press material, writing a screenplay for it. So congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you.
Is it an agonizing process, or is it work for you, or do you feel like you're writing the book again?
Such an interesting experience. So, you know, the book got optioned for film before it got published, which was great, and I love this production company. They've done a lot of really big films, and we talked about doing a feature for Not Her Daughter, and some time passed. And we had a call, and they were like, you know what? I think we really want to go TV with this, like do a probably a limited series. And I was all about that, because I think TV is kind of where it's at, and all of these Netflix and Amazon Prime shows are great. And then they said, and we want you to write the pilot. I was like, oh, okay, I'm not a screenwriter. But it's something I've always been in awe of for people who can do it, because it's so the opposite of novel writing, which is why I'm sure a lot of people don't do both. But I really struggled with the process in the beginning, just from a formula standpoint and how it appears on the page. But once I got into it, I really loved it. And it was kind of releasing me a little bit from Not Her Daughter, because we're actually taking what would have been the sequel to Not Her Daughter, because I wanted to write a sequel to it, actually. And we're taking this concept, the sequel concept, and doing that for the screenplay. So in some ways, it felt really fresh and new, because it's not material I've visited before, even though I'm pulling from Not Her Daughter. We'll see how it goes. They're reviewing it right now, and hopefully be off to the races. So it would be really wild to see it on the screen.
Both of your novels are standalones. Both of your published novels, I should say, are standalones. And you mentioned that Not Her Daughter was possibly going to have a sequel, which it probably should now, if it's going to be a broadcast.
I agree.
But this is another question I ask crime fiction writers. I think it's a very different mindset when you approach a book as the first of a series, and a book that you intend to be either a standalone or a book that might have a sequel. You know, a series is, to me, is like a long-term relationship. And
definitely.
And maybe a standalone is, a bit of something you know will be short time, a summer romance, maybe.
Yes, I like that. I'm in awe, too, of people who write series. I thought that Not Her Daughter might have a sequel. I never really thought beyond that. But I'm also an author. Like, when I'm done with the book, like, I'm completely done and on to the next thing. And that's actually what I really love about screenplays. It's like, once you're done, and you're moving on. But I also like leaving the books a little bit open-ended, in case that were to ever come up, in case there was interest to ever continue that story. But I always wonder for writers what that's like to sit down with those characters again and just continue on and on and on with their storyline. I think it's really a skill that I'm super impressed by, and I'm not sure if I'll ever, go down that path, but it seems like it'd be fun. Well, long-term relationships,
It is a long-term relationship. And I've heard writers, just to paraphrase a couple of them that have done series, have said things like, their publisher will say to them, we want it to be just like the last book, only different.
Exactly.
And, it's a velvet trap, I think. It's a wonderful, wonderful thing to live with the characters you've created for a series, and it is a curse to live with the series characters. So, it's a quality problem. You know what I mean? It's a quality.
Yes, for sure, for sure. And I know a lot of writers who, they've been so successful with the series that they can't, their readers won't allow them really to do anything else and don't want anything else. And I just wonder, being a writer, what that's like when you have to continue with this one storyline and not feeling like you can kind of break out into doing something else. I think it's a good problem to have, because you have your readership, but I think it's also tough when you're wanting to be creative.
Well, I think that's what pseudonyms were created for. So you can just,
right,
create a whole new persona and a whole new world. My last question is, you have two novels under your belt. Who influenced you as a writer? Who did you read? Not necessarily that you said, I want to be just like that writer, but sort of something that you read, a writer that you read that was so profound, it kind of found its way into your writer's DNA.
Yeah, that's really interesting because growing up, so my dad's a writer. He's not a published writer. He should be. But I really grew up reading poetry, tons of poetry, writing poetry, reading poetry. After the sexual assault, that is what I started writing, and that really kind of saved me, I feel like. But then I really started reading a lot of Sylvia Plath and Alice Walker. The Color Purple is probably one of my favorite books of all time. I read a lot of Zora Neale Hurston, George Eliot, Middlemarch. I remember being so impacted by that novel, James Joyce. So a lot of like heavy hitters, a lot of classics that I would read growing up and all through college. But then when I wanted to start branching out in this genre, I mean, when I wrote Not Her Daughter, I was like, what is domestic suspense? Like, that's the genre I was kind of put into. And I was like, I don't even know what this is. But I remember reading Gone Girl and thinking, oh, this is the start of something new for readers. I just kind of felt that impact that she had on readers and kind of a little bit more character driven than just a simple whodunit. So she really impacted me pretty heavily when I was writing Not Her Daughter. But Leon Moriarty, her career is probably one that I most admire today and what she's been able to do and what she continues to do in this genre. That's kind of, you know, whose footsteps I would love to follow currently. I mean, wouldn't we all? But but it's kind of changed over the years. I mean, I am a reader of pretty much all genres. I'm not a huge, you know, science fiction fantasy reader, but I don't read a lot of fiction when I'm writing fiction. I'm a huge nonfiction writer, and I have a side business where I write book proposals for clients who actually want to get published, who want to land agents and publishing deals. I've been doing that for years. So I'm really entrenched in nonfiction just to kind of keep up with the market as well. And I find that it gives my brain space when I am writing novels, which is nice. That's the thing. I actually had nonfiction books published in the health and wellness space, 5 books, but I didn't have the author platform. This was kind of back when social media was just taking off, and but it never fueled me the way that fiction does. Same thing. Like, I just always kind of wanted to sit down and write novels. That's what I wanted to do. So I finally made myself do that.
Well, thank you, Rhea, for talking to us us about this wonderful book that you've written, Because You're Mine. And I look forward to whatever is next on your
thank you
on your shelf. And thank you again.
Thank you.